From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. Here we go for an opportunity of a little bit of commentary and analysis and maybe even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, who runs Northeast Public Radio. He does.
Well, if you listen to me, there'll be some insight.
Well, we'll
if you listen to them, there won't be.
Them being Judy Patrick is here, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
Proud to be one of the them.
Them.
Glad to be here.
Me too. And we really have to start with this. So you're actually going to leave your job.
I am. It was a really tough decision. I'm the editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. Been there for almost 36 years.
Wow.
And decided recently that I should step away and see what else the world has to offer. It's a all-consuming kind of job. And as much as I love journalism and I'll always be involved, I think it's time for somebody else to take the helm.
Well, I'm devastated. Personally, I am devastated. Because you are the best of the best of the best. And it really bothers me that you're leaving, because what will we do now?
Well, I'm going to check out those Black Hills that Rex talks about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the Berkshires that you talk about.
Yeah, you can come over.
Some hiking.
Roselle and I would love to feed you and to bring all kinds of people who would love to meet the real Brenda Starr, Girl Reporter.
And you know what? You get a chance to read more journalism. Even though I read a lot as an editor, there's a lot more I would like to read. Reading is one of the things I'm looking forward to doing more of.
So what do you think is the biggest change you've seen? I mean, 36 years is a long time in one place, right? So what's changed the most in journalism?
Oh, man, there's so many things that have changed how obits come in. I mean, digitization has done so much to everything. How we archive. We used to have four librarians who would clip the paper every day and put them in the little envelopes. That's all automated now. The automation is incredible. A lot of the things that the reporters do nowadays were so cumbersome back in the day. We used to have to go over to the courthouse and get the court documents. Now we can just go online and get them. So in many respects, it's a lot easier, but it's a lot more challenging because they have to do video. They have to look for alternative ways of telling stories. There are many more exciting opportunities for them, far more challenging. Many things are easier, but definitely the newsrooms are smaller.
So it was hot type when you got there, right?
No. I came when they were doing still paste up.
When I started in hot type, that was really with a glue pot on the desk and a, you know, clackety clack of typewriters. You have to, you know, cut and paste was literally, you cut the paper that you're writing on and paste it if you wanted to move a paragraph around.
When I was the publisher of the Fire Island Sun, don't you know, the alternative newspaper of Fire Island.
Yeah, maybe I'll get to Fire Island.
Yeah, you should. You should definitely do it because it's really a wonderful place. But in any case, we were really upfront in terms of doing it the new way, not the hot type way. So it's great.
Uh-huh.
Offset, as we called it.
Mm-hmm.
But hundreds of people would be involved in printing the paper back in the day.
Yeah.
And now the automation is incredible. I don't think 50 years ago they could have imagined how we print the paper nowadays.
Yeah, that's certainly true. You know, actually, the skills that we have lost that used to be important, people in jobs like Judy and I used to have to be able to read upside down and backwards because that's the way the lead was set into trays. And I remember as a young intern at a paper with hot type, watching the managing editor in the composing room going down and deciding, okay, we're going to pull out this. And he just literally lifted out the bottom paragraph and then quickly stuffed in little pieces of lead to fan out a little bit further to the lines between the type. So even an editor was involved with hot lead and, well, it was not hot at that moment, of course, but it was a very different set of skills.
So does it make it easier to get the paper out when you don't have the hot type?
Well, when your press works, right?
Sorry. In fact, I'd like to take this moment to thank Rex for printing our paper last week. We, for the first time ever, our press broke down to such an extent we weren't able to print. And so the Times Union, there's a tradition in the newspaper industry where one paper helps out another. They printed our paper.
Here's one of the other changes in that regard, that papers print other papers. So that night, our press actually handled 7 different titles.
Wow, 7 because, different papers.
Yeah, we ordinarily print 4 every evening in our shop, and you ordinarily print 3. And so we had to take all of the work of the Gazette, too, that night. So that was quite a wonderful night for our press people.
Right.
So, Judy, I have a question for you, and maybe Rex could pipe up, too. Are newspapers more important or less important in their communities than they were when you started?
Oh, good question. You know, when I started, almost everybody got a delivery of the paper. I would drive around town and there would be blue Gazette boxes in front of every single house. You don't see that nearly as much anymore, and that makes me very sad. I'm hoping that they're checking us out online, but the newspaper as being pervasive, you don't see that so much anymore. But I think news is as important as it ever was. But
yeah.
The idea that people, you know, rely on that paper, they open it up, they do their jumble, they check out the obits. I mean,
they read the Bridge column.
We still run a Bridge column.
Wow. So does Rex. He learned the hard way. You couldn't take the
Yeah,
Bridge
I tried to get rid of the Bridge column once to save space when the first sort of downsizing, and people got really upset. So I thought, well, I've got a solution to that. I'll take out one of the crosswords.
We laugh because that is a bad decision as well.
Oh, that's a terrible decision.
The problem, of course, is that each of these things, the Bridge column,
the bowling.
All of those things have a constituency. Mm-hmm. And even if the constituency is small, it's like taking, it would be like if I wanted to, don't want to, but if I wanted to take the opera off of WAMC, people would be coming around and forming picket lines out front of the
place.
But
here's how the internet has changed, and one of the other ways the internet has changed things is that there can now be such targeted delivery of that specific content that you don't need to have a great aggregator like a newspaper to do that anymore. It used to be that if you wanted to get a Bridge column every day, you had to buy the newspaper. But now, if you're digitally savvy, which probably most Bridge players, frankly, are not because it's an older person's sport, let's say. I mean, I'm just being the reality of it. Not a lot of young people are taking a Bridge. So if you're digitally savvy, you can go to a Bridge site and get all of that. And even comics, you know, you can go and get your comics online. So there's less value in a newspaper just pulling everything together, which is why we have a lot less wire content, too. Why our newspapers focus so much on local news, because you can get that national, international stuff about anywhere. But still, Judy and I still, I'm sure, get emails and letters, especially when you get printed letters, you know what they're going to say. They're going to say, why don't you ever cover fill in the blank, some national story. They want us to be covering the national news because for a lot of, again, older readers, we're the only place they get that.
And now the irony here, if that's the proper word, I hope it is that, you know, in the old days, you guys used to be the aggregators, and now you're among the aggregated.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things they talk about for editors nowadays is you have to be brave enough to not cover certain things, to make those decisions that you're not going to go to that Recreation Commission meeting. And you have to make those decisions because you just don't have the people to handle it. And you have to make the decision to cover something else better and withstand the complaints.
Yeah, but you know, the difficulty is sometimes when you then find that something has been going on that's not on the up and up in one of these local communities that you used to cover, and so then you bring it out. You send a reporter, like we've had a reporter focusing on misconduct in the town of Half Moon in Saratoga County. You know, if we covered Half Moon the way we should have over the last several years, we might have found that stuff before it happened. And the same thing is true. There are communities all over this region that we used to cover pretty aggressively that we just don't have enough reporters to do anymore.
Right, and you don't know what's out there that we're missing.
Yeah.
It is
well,
scary.
You know, one of the things that's been occurring to me lately, I think I just wrote something about this, because being so old, I don't remember what I wrote.
It's okay, neither do your readers.
but one of the things I've been writing about is that Andrew Cuomo's best friends, the people who were closest to him, have turned out to be accused of being grafters, major grafters. And there is what everybody expected to be the trial of the century down in New York. Mm-hmm. Joe Prococo and Todd Howe and all these other guys, you know, are on trial. They could spend a lot of years in jail as a result of what's happening. Well, a lot of people thought that this was going to kill Cuomo's chances, A, for re-election, as governor, and B, his chances for running for president of the United States. However, because Trump, the president, has sucked all the wind out of the press, you can hardly find anything about the trial. Yeah, you can find some stuff, but not a lot.
Hey, I've put it on the front page most days.
And by the way, I have read every bit of your excellent reporting. And it is.
Thank you.
But we're talking about the New York Times, and we're talking about all of these other things. And by the way, kudos to you, Rex, because it really has been excellent
coverage. It's awfully expensive, I just have to say. By the way, we got a reporter who got an Airbnb apartment across the Hudson in Jersey City so that we could afford to have him stay there for a month or 6 weeks. And that's, it's not in my budget. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to have to cut in order to pay for that, but we'll see,
Right.
That's exactly what Judy's talking about, the stuff you have to. But I think you make an interesting point, Alan, that our attention is so diverted. I was reading a national correspondent today who was saying that in the month of January of 2018, looking back at that month just passed, stories that once would have been huge coverage are just little sidelines because there's just so much that comes barreling down at us every day. We are really living at warp speed in the Trump universe.
So the question about Trump, that if I could just raise it with you guys for a moment, is there are those of us who really think he's leading us down the road to totalitarianism and perhaps even, a sort of fascism. And, when you attack the press, as we've talked about here so often on all the rest, those are all things that dictators and others, Hitlers and others, have done in the past. At what point does a newspaper editor who knows in their heart of hearts that this is really bad stuff have to lose some of the so-called impartiality, the equivalencies? He said, they said, she said. I mean, at what point do you really have to show yourself?
With this scenario, it's pretty easy. I mean, you do it on the opinion page, but also the stories alone, the facts by themselves do a really good job of pointing these things out, I think. I don't think you need to be biased when you report this stuff. Just be straight. Go straight down the middle with it. People will read these stories, and it's the truth. It's easy enough to
draw
conclusions.
I'm sorry for interrupting, of course, as always. But, of course, you get it, that the way you play those stories, the headlines you put on those stories, the questions that are asked, the placement of the stories. Rex just gave himself away, of course. And he said, hey, I put that on the front page every day. Well, that's it. He's put it on the front page, which means he's given it more importance, otherwise known as the authoritative allocation of scarce resources.
Ba-dum-ba-dum.
But play is important. One of the reasons I get calls a lot is the fact that I put something on the front page. Why did you put that Trump story on the front page?
How vitriolic? Is it getting worse? My question is, because
yes.
I know here we're getting some really wicked telephone calls.
On both sides, it's getting worse. But mostly it comes from Trump supporters who are angry at us for supposedly being too hard on him. And to Judy's point, the code of ethics of journalism.
Oh, God, not again.
Does not tell us report precisely what the president said and leave it at that. It tells us seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. And when you seek the truth, that means you have to call inaccuracies for what they are. When the president said in his State of the Union address that we enacted the biggest tax cuts and reform in American history, it's not the biggest tax cut. In fact, it's the eighth largest since 1918, or the fourth largest in inflation-adjusted dollars. But when you point that out, the supporters of the president will say, well, there you go, being biased again.
Well, sure. So, for example, we know that the value of the American dollar compared, for example, to the pound is falling. So if you take an article in the paper and say, dollar falls again.
Yeah.
You're going to get that telephone call saying, what about the stock market being at a historic highs? Or stock market drops 300 and whatever points in one day, somebody's going to say, where were you when it kept going up?
Yeah. Or when, people often confuse the stock market with the economy, of course, and think that just because the stock market is up that things are great in the economy. The economy is great, but, the economy grew remarkably during the previous administration. In fact, when the president said, since the election, we've created 2.5 million new jobs or something like that, actually job creation in Trump's first 11 months was 12% lower than the job creation in the previous 11 months, which was the end of the Obama administration. So I'm not saying that to be biased against Donald Trump. I'm just saying that as a matter of being a truth-telling journalist. But that puts us at odds with the administration. He doesn't like that, and his supporters, therefore, don't like that.
Well, I'm fascinated by all of this. You know, you work for the Hearst, of course, and they have given you, obviously, the Times Union is a very fair newspaper, a little too fair. But I get calls about National Public Radio all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I've noticed, and so have a lot of other people, that National Public Radio, more than the New York Times, for example, has been engaged in what I would call false equivalency. In other words, they're giving Trump more of a break than people think. And then you start to worry about, well, why are they doing that? Is that because some of their member stations are feeling the heat in the red states and they're worried that they're not going to get their money, and therefore, if they don't get I'm just making this stuff up, but if they don't get their money, you know, who will give it to NPR, who is, you know, sucking the member stations dry? Oh, did I say that? And so
I think your listeners probably are very happy that you carry NPR. So when you say they're sucking the member stations dry, your listeners might appreciate the fact that you bring them NPR, don't you think?
Well, I think there's no question that some do. I get a lot of calls, by the way, Rex, because I know you've been an apologist for NPR for a long time.
I think NPR is terrific,
yeah,
and
I know.
You would just rather have them take more.
I just like to finish my sentence
before you get involved
in all of that. but I have to say, there's no question in my mind that NPR, compared to the New York Times, has not been a leader in terms of a real leader in exposing the problems of the Trump administration. I also get calls, Rex, for whatever it's worth, from people who are saying you don't need NPR. I get a fair number of those saying, you guys could take all of that money. We pay them, you know, approaching $1 million a year. That's a lot of money for this.
That's
this
a fund drive.
Well, yeah. Why don't you try it? Why don't you drop NPR for a few months and see what happens to your fund drive and your listenership?
You're such a cynical
person.
I'm
just suggesting, you know, if you're such an opponent.
Speaking down your elitist nose at me.
But this ability to fact check is something that we wouldn't have been able to do a generation ago, or the immediacy of the fact check. So right now, it's almost as if, as he said the words, in the middle of the speech, there would be, you know, a message across the bottom of the screen that says, no, in fact, job growth was this. In the old days, or 10 years ago, we would have had to wait for the next day's paper. We would have just reported what he said in that speech. So that's one of the beautiful things about the digital world.
That's true. Actually, a great example of how things have changed. When I first came to the Times Union as managing editor for news in 1995, that fall, it was the first visit to the Business Council of New York State of the new governor, George Pataki. And I tell this story sometimes about the governor stood up in front of the Business Council at their opening banquet, and he talked about how he had turned around the economy of New York State in his first 9 months in office. And you know, he's a tall guy, Pataki, and he stretched his arms out really big, and he said, what a turnaround! What a story! So our reporter who was covering that, I was in the audience because I was going to do a panel discussion the next day. Our reporter who was covering that quoted the governor. What a story, what a turnaround. And so that was a true account of what the governor said. But we looked into it. It took a while because my predecessor didn't want to do this story, but eventually we got a story done.
That was your predecessor?
Jeff Cohen.
Jeff Cohen.
Yeah, exactly. But eventually we got a story that examined the state of the economy. We took 7 different indices of economic growth, and we looked at the end of the Cuomo administration, Mario Cuomo, that is, and the beginning of the Pataki administration. And on 5 of the 7 indices, the state was actually performing better at the end of the Cuomo administration than the beginning of Pataki. And so which of the stories is true? What our reporter presented was true of what the governor said, but then it took us months and months to get the real story of what it was.
Or did anybody care?
Or did anybody care? Well, we don't know.
So, you know, that's the thing of it.
Mm-hmm.
We worry about the impact of these stories, but impact, it'd be great to measure impact of a particular story that you put in the paper, Judy. You know what I mean?
Well, you can, kind of. When you put it online, you can figure out how many clicks. What's more than clicks is how long people are reading it, how often they're sharing it, if they comment on it. There's a lot more ways to measure engagement, and it's a path we're going down. In many respects, it's a great thing. In some respects, I worry that it's too much click-driven.
Yeah, actually.
Was that before or after Pataki got hit by the chicken truck? Now, that was an interesting story.
Man, that is a story I forgot.
Well, Pataki got hit. He was in a car, and there was a crash, and it had to do with a frozen chicken truck.
The chickens are frozen, not the truck.
Or maybe
just checking what
Pataki
modified what there. I had forgotten about the frozen chicken
truck. I'm
going
to look it up.
You know, actually,
go look it up.
You talk about a great headline, by the way. When I was a young reporter at Newsday, there was an accident on the Long Island Expressway. and a truck carrying a load of watermelons from the East End to a marketplace in New York City collided with a truck that was carrying jars of stuff that was going to a supermarket, including jars of mayonnaise and stuff. And these two trucks collided, and it just created a mess all over the LIE. The whole westbound lanes of the Long Island Expressway had to be closed down. And the wonderful headline on Newsday the next day was, "Recipe for Long Island Summer Jam." Sorry, just had to. We love headline writers. You know, some of the great headline writers who have retired, we miss, because that is a great skill that, you know, we've always enjoyed. Anyway, this is the Media Project. If you have your thoughts you'd like to share, we've been doing some reminiscing here and some talking. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith. Our address is media@wamc.org. Media@wamc.org.
I don't know what I'm going to do to stay, you know, on the right path here with Judy, you know, who has always been willing to tell me where I've deviated from the right path.
A lot of people want to tell you that.
Well, some of them are more important than others.
Oh, what can you do? Anyway, we are the Media Project. So we just ought to do one quick little thing. We have had all of this stuff about a lot of the Me Too stories, that is, talking about sexual assault. And one of the issues has been to tell the stories of sexual assault victims. The question that we have sometimes talked about in the show is the anonymity policies. Because typically, you know, we don't list the names of sexual assault victims, but sometimes, you know, it is necessary to tell a person's story if they want their name used. And there is a really growing discussion in journalism about whether women's names ought to be used in sexual assault stories. Do you have any thoughts about that, as the only woman in the room?
You know, it is an issue that was really discussed when I first started. The theory there was that if you gave them anonymity, they would be more likely to come forward. Or the fact that people who had been sexually assaulted didn't want to report it to police because they didn't want their names and identities splashed across the paper. So feminist groups would encourage us not to do that, and thus encourage people to come forward and report these important things. But I've dealt with these issues all these years, and what it did is kind of stifle journalists' ability to, you know, reach out to these victims and get their stories. And so it's kind of like a hidden crime. You don't really know what's going on or how it happened, and you don't get to tell the stories of these people. They may very well be willing to tell their stories. The other thing is they have nothing to be ashamed of about, and this approach of ours does tend to say, yeah, this is something you should be ashamed of. We're going to protect you, almost like suicide victims. I think we don't say the name of suicide victims unless they kill themselves in a public place. I had a story recently where somebody didn't want to identify a domestic violence victim. I have one police agency that won't tell me the name of any kind of victim.
Before we go, I just want to say one last thing about Judy. Judy, Judy, Judy.
There are a few people in the audience old enough to know what that is a reference to. We really appreciate it. Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette, Dr. Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us on The Media Project.
And Judy's promised to come back often.
Okay.
Remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery? She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Judy Patrick is editor of the Daily Gazette. And Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.